Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Wong.
This is your reminder that because it's Monday, we're going to have open phone lines at 1 p.m. I'm debating my question, Jake. Is the question going to be, you know, I think the question where there are the most possible answers, those are my favorite caller questions, are like, what's the Seahawks' biggest problem? There's 500 possible answers to this question. And you know what? I'm going to include Action Green uniforms as one of them because they're trash.
Oh, really?
They're trash.
You're going to put that on the table. Wow, everything is under fire right now.
I don't mind Action Green, the concept, the idea of Action Green. Like, I like it as a little highlight. I actually really like that kind of lime green color. The full head-to-toe Action Green makes the turf on the field grass look dirty, and I don't like it. I don't like it. It's just okay. It's
all right.
It's upsetting to me.
One of your many grievances as to what's going wrong.
So
right now,
if that's your answer as to the biggest problem with the Seahawks, you know what? Sound off. Then maybe that's your answer. But we're going to open up those phone lines in a little under an hour. I'll give you that number at the time. Don't call right now. You're going to be on hold for way too long. I'll give you the number. Don't worry. All right. First, though, we do this after every single Seahawks game. Take a deeper dive into the little moments you might have missed with what caught my eye. Jake, as always, get us started.
Okay, I'll get you started right here. This isn't anything to do with X's and O's, but just my viewing pleasure. Jonathan Vilma is a harder listen than Troy Aikman.
Like, no,
Stacey,
Jake,
yes.
You hate Troy Aikman.
You're in the press box. You're in
what?
The press box, so you don't listen to the commentary.
No.
I'm telling you, you would be blown away by Jonathan Vilma.
Did you find yourself missing Troy?
Says, never.
Okay,
I wouldn't get to that point, but maybe I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind hearing something else, but like, man, he's a tough listen to, Stacey. Like, just some of the things he was saying, you know, calling Michael Strahan an old fart because he turned 50 years old. It's like, you know, and then saying that Russell Wilson can't read defenses anymore because they tried to throw a quick flat route on 3rd and 7 because they thought they were going to catch them in pressure and they don't trust their, you know, pass protection. You know, there were just a lot of things that Jonathan Vilma said throughout the broadcast that I just kept shaking my head going, really?
What was the most
out
egregious?
Out of all the talented broadcasters that are out there, like, I just don't understand it. I think it was that 3rd and 7
that
where he
one.
Just said, yep, see, the Seahawks, they just don't think Russell can read defense. Like, really? Do you know that they think that? Like, how are you? Like, he didn't even say, oh, maybe that's what they were doing, or just like speculate. He was like, nope, see, this is what was going on. It's like, what? What are you talking about? It's unbelievable.
What was worse, Jake? And I need you to be honest right now. I'm trying to pull it up, but hearing Vilma on the play-by-play, who you said was worse than even Troy Aikman, our only enemy of the show, Troy Aikman. Is it worse and more grating for you to hear that or my OBJ update? What, like,
oh,
truly
man.
Hurt?
No, I
your
would take the OBJ
soul.
Update coming into every segment over listening to Jonathan Vilma call
you a game. Would?
Yes.
Because you guys Gladly. Were really hard on me for that one. What I thought was like a really, really solid update. I thought it was like a fantastic. I mean, here it is again. Once again,
it's time for an Odell update.
That was when it was sad. That was when he signed with the Rams. I did that one for Jake. It's the NFL injury
yes.
music. One of my favorite songs is when they're like, yes, oh, someone's getting carted off. Sad version of this
I
music.
Would take
it's
that
so
over having to listen to Jonathan Vilma. He is literally a mute listen. Like, you just have to turn on the
no.
you just have to turn the volume down and just watch the game. It was insane. We've had a couple times. I like Kenny Albert. We had him on the show. Like, I like him, but man, Jonathan Vilma. Oof,
all right, oof, Jessica in listen. Florida texting in. She's right with you, Jake. I watched the game on mute for the same
Amen.
Reason. All right, next
Amen.
Up here. You know what caught my eye? D. Eskridge on the sidelines. Why did it catch my eye? Because why is he on the sideline? I know he's a rookie. I know he's getting back into it. I don't expect him to be in there for the majority of snaps, maybe even half of snaps. But, like, can we see a little bit more? I thought that Dee Eskridge was going to be this this really fresh kind of marker of Shane Waldron's arrival in Seattle's offensive system, of the kind of offense he would borrow from the Rams to bring in this speedy, quick receiver. And again, I am giving some leeway here. I am giving leeway that they are being very safe with him, very cautious, and I understand all of it, and I think that that's the right call. But it is a bummer to look down there on the sideline and see him on the sideline and just wonder what he would look like getting more snaps.
I'm right there with you. It makes no sense to me. I don't understand it. I don't know who's in charge of the rotation. Sometimes it's the offensive coordinator who, you know, they have plays tied in with certain players. Or if it's, you know, Nate Carroll is the receiver coach who is rotating the guys in and out. Sometimes it changes based off of, you know, the different systems or responsibilities. But whoever is in charge of rotating in the receivers, I do not understand how Dee Eskridge is not being put on the field more often. How he is not seeing more snaps and why he's not being utilized. If he's healthy, he's out there, what the heck are they doing? Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And honestly, it's a travesty. So, Stacey, as you point to, you know, drafting and free agent acquisition as the number one problem as to why the organization is 3-7, well, you tack that on and you make it even worse. How they utilize their talent, getting the best out of those players that they bring here, they don't do a very good job.
Yep.
And what makes it worse is that you pick Dee Eskridge over a couple picks later. They pick Creed Humphrey. You know, DJ's losing his mind over here in show prep about Creed Humphrey. Who was that?
Sure.
Oh, just the center. Just the center that Kansas City drafted from Oklahoma that's going to be a Pro Bowler this year. Maybe could have used that. You definitely would have put him out on the field. You're not going to put the receiver out on the field, and you're not going to use him in special teams and allow him to return kicks and return punts, which is another reason why you drafted him. What are you doing? What are we doing out here? Dee Eskridge needs to be more a part of this offense. He needs to be, you know, you need to find ways to get the ball in his hands to balance out everything else. And it doesn't make any sense. I'm right there with you. Now you just got me mad, Stacey.
I know.
I'm
sorry.
Okay, but to add on to it, when it comes to this offense, it has zero flow, zero rhythm. I don't understand it. It absolutely should not be this hard. When you have Russell Wilson, when you have DK Metcalf, when you have Tyler Lockett, and you have Gerald Everett. I mean, man, Gerald Everett, that run after catch, by the way, what an effort by Gerald Everett. That was incredible. But, you know, getting back on topic here, it just doesn't marry with what they're trying to do. I don't understand. And so, you know, when you have Russell Wilson, who has an offense, by and large, they have struggled in the passing game, you have to find a way to make it easier. And, you know, one of the things, what have I talked about constantly, Stacey? Getting him out on the edge, getting him on the move. And they did that one time in that game, and guess what? It was a huge completion to Gerald Everett.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't hit Gerald Everett, he's got Tyler Lockett wide open in the flat. So find ways to get him involved, get him in the rhythm of the game, get the offense moving the chains in a way that is positive. And every time that they feel like they have some positive momentum, you have a toss that Alex Collins doesn't know is coming, and now it's 3rd and 20, right? They just keep shooting themselves in the foot for a variety of different reasons, and it's just so disappointing to see this offense that I believe still has so much potential just being completely wasted and not seeing players live up to their potential. And Russell Wilson continuing to struggle and have difficulty in decision-making in critical moments at times, like the, you know, in the red zone before the half. You got to have that touchdown to Gerald Everett. That one you got to make happen. And those are things that you just got to see this. I need to see this come together in the last 7 games, Stacey. I just am really hoping that the offense can show some sort of life.
Yeah, I was I was really critical of drafting and team building and personnel acquisition and trades, and I still stand by those critiques. But that is not to say this team doesn't have stars and doesn't have talent. I mean, DK Metcalf is a star. Tyler Lockett is a star. Russell Wilson is a star. Defensively, they have stars. It isn't Dwayne Brown's best year. He's struggled, but my God, if he hasn't been their best offensive lineman since coming here. You know what I mean? Like, it's they have enough weapons to get it done. Jake, you mentioned, just being so out of sorts, out of a rhythm. I've got to get back to the question. It's so annoying. But sometimes when they've looked their best, it's an up-tempo. Genuinely, why aren't they doing it more? Is it not being able to get to those plays when you have third down failures? Is it a new playbook?
Part of it is that, yes. But I also believe that when you're talking about this system and this offense, they should be putting Russell Wilson and this offense at the line of scrimmage and putting them on the ball. And you can't do it every drive and every moment of every game, but I just believe that there should be a lot of freedom that is given to that quarterback, and he has put you in good positions more often than not. Mm-hmm. And I think they need to lean into that more than ever before, given the current struggles that they are having, calling plays, producing plays. And it is when your quarterback feels most comfortable. It's when he feels at most rhythm and in charge. And so, leaning into that side of it, I just think you got to go for it. And I don't understand what the hesitation has been over the past few years, but that to me, it is obvious, right? When you see Russell Wilson in a rhythm, when you see him confident, when you see him owning the line of scrimmage, it looks different to the eye. And the problem is that you've not been able to put yourself in that position. And Russell Wilson's part to blame for that, right? I mean, decision making, third down conversions, some of those things come together, but also, everybody has a part in that. I mean, offensive line protection was poor. You had a couple really, really monstrous drops in that game as well. I mean, just from head to toe, it was a disaster.
All right, let me get to one more here. Trey Brown got beat deep on the same play he was injured, and I'll say two things. Number one, it was really the first time I can recall where he got beat deep. He's been such a pleasant surprise on defense and has really settled in. That secondary as a whole has settled in, and I think fans should be really happy with what they've seen from him so far, especially being a rookie who missed time in training camp, by the way, because he was injured, missed some time to start the year. So these are still very new, very fresh reps he's getting, and I've been so impressed by him. And Jake, you've talked about kind of the physicality that he's had, the willingness to kind of be more aggressive and be instinctive on some of those plays in a way that sometimes rookies are afraid. And I love that take. So unfortunately, I do want to get to this. Pete Carroll on with Mike Salk this morning talked about Trey Brown, his injury update here.
No more specifics today, but he did affect a patellar tendon. He's had a long-term kind of in and out thing over the years, back all the way to college and all, that he's dealt with. And he put that foot in the ground. He was going up. He's going to go make that play on the deep ball, and he hit it, and it just crumpled him, he had a fine run at his rookie shot here, and I was really, really fired up about the way he played and the consistency.
Ooh, I don't love he had a fine year. I don't love the use of past tense there, although it could also be a total slip. Pete Carroll, I believe him that he does not have the information yet to say that his season is done. Like, I actually believe that because I think that when they get that information, it's very obvious. When Jimmy Graham tore his patellar tendon, that tendon that kind of connects your kneecap, basically, it's like the kneecap tendon to your upper thigh. First of all, when you tear it, your kneecap goes into your thigh. It's the most disgusting thing I've ever heard, and also apparently one of the most painful injuries. And secondly, we heard right away, immediately after the game, it was, yep, it's pretty clear. On the tests, it's very obvious, like his season is done. And the other version of that you've seen is Deshaun Shedd. I think it was Deshaun Shedd who struggled with, who was it that was struggling with patellar tendonitis? Where he was just kind of in and out with
him. Oh, it was Bradley McDougal.
Bradley McDougal, you're right. Bradley McDougal. Yeah. I knew it was a defensive back who's no longer here, struggling with patellar tendonitis. And he was in and out and played through it, a separate issue. So I can't tell. Pete Carroll kind of hints that maybe it's an issue. The patellar tendon is an issue that Brown has had before. So maybe it's something more like that. That's like a chronic thing that he'll just have to play through rather than like a complete rupture. But I don't know.
Maybe.
We'll find out.
Maybe it's concerning. I mean, obviously you talk about that and it's such a bummer. He was such a fun player to watch and was such a big boost to this team. But the other thing that was concerning to me was that Pete Carroll also brought up the fact that he had knee issues going back to his days in Oklahoma. So somebody that you think is really positive for you, is this another Marquise Blair situation? I mean, way too early to talk about that and to tell, but like, my goodness, with all of the, you know, drafting concerns and worries and all that, I mean, it certainly makes you curious about that side of it. How bad is this and how much is this going to affect him moving forward? And when you talk about depth, I mean, man, you could see the depth really drop off once Trey Brown was off the field. Yeah. You already noticed it when DJ Reed wasn't out there, and now you're back to square one.
Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Well, with their loss yesterday, the Seahawks are sitting two games back of the final NFC playoff spot with seven games to go. Stacy, what is the real headline?
Russell Wilson is not the Seahawks' biggest problem, but the fact that he can't mask it is. Again, I thought the Seahawks' biggest problem was a years-long kind of accruing guys that didn't end up working out for you, especially those first-round picks or really early second-round picks. Obviously, I'm not including a second-round pick like DK Metcalf in that. And obviously, they've made fantastic draft picks like Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and Tyler Lockett and Frank Clark, honestly, before you traded him, had 14 sacks for you in his final season. But you used to be able to kind of make up for some random misses by Russell Wilson playing like an MVP. He's not playing like an MVP right now. And so instead, what you're looking at is a Seahawks team where suddenly those warts are a little more obvious.
Yeah, 100%. And when you are not able to build and you're not able to build a good supporting cast, well, I mean, when your stars struggle, when they fail, there's no one else to hold them up. And so, as you said, it makes it look 10 times worse. And it's a very difficult thing to be witnessing and to watch here with this team at 3-7. But my only hope in this situation is that you are forced to look at the issues. You are forced to look at the struggles that you have had and the reasons why you are currently here at this point and to be able to adequately address them. And sometimes you need adversity to be able to get you to come out on the better side of it. And right now, they have been stuck. Stacy, we've been saying it for multiple years now with this organization that they have just spun their wheels in the mud and just they have not been able to get themselves out. And what are they going to do to be able to get themselves progressing and moving forward and not regressing and just hanging on? And that is going to be the biggest question for the remainder of the season and honestly for the entire offseason, as the Seahawks have to do some serious self-reflection and reevaluation of this organization and how they move forward.
Headline rewrites.
UW will not be attending a bowl game this year as the Huskies were defeated by Colorado 20-17 on Saturday. Stacy, what is the real headline?
Because time is a flat circle, UW will be beating the Cougs in the Apple Cup.
Someone once told me time is a flat circle.
Is it a prediction I feel good about? No. Am I confident in it? No. Will I be making a single bet where I'm betting on my prediction coming true? Absolutely not. That would be is ludicrous. I would never do that. It's a stupid prediction. But something about just the bad things always happening, it makes sense in a very chaotic football season that Washington somehow would still win the Apple Cup. It doesn't make any sense on paper. And I will say this. As a Husky, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see UW win the Apple Cup. I'll be rooting for them, and I'll be talking trash in my fantasy football group that has plenty of former Cougs. But I also don't want Oregon to win the North. Like, I would love for Oregon to lose. Low key. I won't be saying it out loud. Don't tell my family. Low key, I would love to see the Cougs win the North, given that Washington obviously will not.
That would be tremendous. So you would be willing to sacrifice yourself?
Yes.
For
I'm that kind of
just
person.
Just so Oregon could not be.
That's exactly
at the
correct.
Top.
That's I look. Okay. I
that's true dedication and hatred,
thank
and
you.
I respect it.
Thank you.
In regards to that upset pick, I mean, hey, the Pac-12 makes no sense at all. So whatever. I could go along with it, but I do think that Washington State is the better, more stable program at this point, and that is embarrassing given the fact that UW should not be in that position but whatsoever.
That's exactly why Washington is going to win. You know what I mean? Like, it just makes sense. It makes sense because it wouldn't make sense. It's a very weird twist.
Headline Rewrites.
Well, the Kraken put an end to their six-game losing streak last night by beating the Washington Capitals. Stacey, what is the real headline?
Let's hope the Seattle Seahawks can have similar luck against another Washington team. That, by the way, being the upcoming Washington football team is going to be Seattle's...
It's
49ers.
Monday night football against Washington.
Are we thinking, sidebar, because Seattle's got two more primetime games?
Yes.
Those are going to be flexed. I mean, at least the Sunday night.
The San Francisco one has to be, right?
It has to be. Right?
So sad.
I don't want it to be. I like Sunday night football. I like primetime games. They're fun.
I love it, too. I love it, too. I think that... When you look at the Kraken pulling this off, I just am really shocked. Can I be honest about that?
Yeah, you can absolutely be honest.
Okay.
1,000%.
Yeah, I didn't see that happening at all. I the six-game losing streak, I guess, you know, it's great that it came to an end here against a really good Washington Capitals team, but I just thought that right now with the way that they're going that they'd have a long extended losing streak. And look, I don't know if there's something that they can really truly build off of for them to kind of turn their season around, and maybe they're not in it necessarily for the playoffs, but for them to be able to look at themselves and say, hey, here is the team that we are, here's the team that we want to be, and we know how we want to build off of this season moving forward. That is my one hope. That is my one goal for the Kraken this season as they go into their, you know, as they're in their inaugural season as an expansion franchise. And, hey, I'll take the surprise win over the Capitals.
All right. Well, I wouldn't say the Seahawks game, any stats from it were particularly surprising so much as they were disheartening. But there was one game in Week 11 that had a really surprising stat to come out of it. I'll tell you that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
How about this one, Jake? The Chiefs defeated the Cowboys 19-9, but here's a weird stat. Neither quarterback threw a touchdown pass. Neither one.
Not what I was anticipating.
No, absolutely not. There were two touchdowns total, both rushing touchdowns. The rest of the scores were all field goals, so no touchdowns. But both quarterbacks threw at least one interception. I believe Prescott threw two.
When you talk about that matchup in particular, it just really goes to show that this was something that Pete Carroll was really hoping would happen and was clinging on to the fact that, look, the Kansas City Chiefs were struggling, and then they find their rhythm. They find their way back, and really they start clicking again. And you were hoping that that could happen for the Seattle Seahawks, and when Russell returns, boom, you start to see them get on the streak here, and that just did not happen. And so what you see with the Chiefs is everybody down and out on them, and now they're roaring back. So the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, I don't know if this is an indictment on the type of team that they are, but this is always why, Stacey, you know, the Dallas Cowboys are a team that I'm really, really cautious of to really jump on their bandwagon because they have not been there before, and B, they're the ultimate choke artist. They just find a way to lose in certain situations, and I don't think that defense, I think the defense is better, but it's not great. Mm-hmm. And so I would not be surprised if you see the Dallas Cowboys come back to earth a little bit as the season progresses on in the second half.
What's been working for the Chiefs? Because never forget, a couple weeks ago when both the Seahawks and Chiefs were in dire straits, both defenses were at the bottom of the league. The Chiefs were one of the only teams defensively where Seattle was actually outperforming them at one point. And suddenly you've seen Kansas City jump back up there, not through wins that have been entirely beautiful, right? I mean, they didn't really struggle against the Raiders. That was pretty dominant. But, I mean, this was a struggle, 19-9 with no touchdown.
Correct. But, passing, you know, you find a way to win. Right? You find a way to win, and you're right. It wasn't pretty, but they got it done. And one of the things that I think is a big factor for them is being able to be willing to take what is being given to them. They had 126 yards on the ground in this game, and so they continue to keep leaning into the run game for them. And And, you know, in these playoff matchups, right, this is really what that is, playoff matchups. You look at third down efficiency, Stacey, they were 4 for 12. So if you just look at the numbers, it's not like they blow you away with what Kansas City was able to do. But in these close types of games, the difference is you know, really making sure you win the turnover battle, making sure that you take advantage of the points and the opportunities that are given to you, and that's what they did. That's
right.
What they did. They were 2 for 3 in red zone opportunities, and Dallas was 0 for 2.
Yeah. Heading to an NFC versus NFC matchup. This one a divisional matchup. The Packers. The Vikings defeated the Packers 34-31 on a last-second field goal. Really weird. Congratulations to fantasy owners of Aaron Rodgers, though not necessarily Packers fans. In a loss, Aaron Rodgers had 385 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a near-perfect rating. Whew. Couldn't happen to a better guy.
Right. This was a game that, as I watched this in complete envy of both offenses. I watched these two offenses have great balance in run game and passing attack. I watched them be, you know, the Green Bay Packers struggled at first in this game. They didn't start strong. And then once they found their rhythm, they never looked back. And you could just see it. The moment that they clicked and the moment that Aaron Rodgers felt the momentum and the feeling of the game, it was game on. And that is something that we have not seen here in Seattle. We have not seen the run in the pass delegated well where they set each other up. We have not seen Russell Wilson up to this point look comfortable, look confident for a full 60 minutes of football. And that is something that I'm completely envious of as I watch that game unfold between the Vikings and the Green Bay Packers. And it's something that the Seahawks, they've got to be able to find a way to get back to that.
Meanwhile, the Colts shocked the Bills, blowing them out 41-15 in Buffalo. Colts running back Jonathan Taylor recorded 5 touchdowns. Love that guy. The Bills have now lost 3 of 5. Are they still a legitimate contender? That's my first question. Let's talk that one first. Then I got one about Josh Allen for you.
Okay. You got one about Josh Allen.
Yeah.
All
you
right.
know what? I'll throw it in now. I'm going to throw it in now because it's related.
Yeah, please do.
And
please
I'm really
do.
Curious about your answer. I want to make sure we get it. Is Josh Allen actually like a legitimate MVP franchise guy? Because you think about it, he's had like one stellar, out of control, amazing season.
Correct.
Really?
Correct. Yes. This is why, you know, look, I still am a big believer in Josh Allen. I'm still a fan of his. I think that he's a very talented player who is capable of great things, and you saw that last year. At the same time, though, this is why you don't dub people, you know, after one season.
Yeah.
This is why you don't say all of a sudden Josh Allen is the greatest quarterback ever and that he is going to be, you know, a guy that's going to take off and for years and years. Because what we've seen in this league is you see trends, you see spikes, you see different things. Everybody can have one good year, but can you sustain that? And can you continue to play at that high level? That is the unique challenge, especially at quarterback in the NFL, and not many can do that. And so, you know, I look at Josh Allen, and I'm not down and out on him, but it's more of, I think, coming back down to earth a little bit, whereas 2020 was just an unbelievable
right.
year where everything just kind of came together for him.
Yeah, it's very weird to see that sudden drop off. All right, let me quickly tell you guys what we have coming up. So we've got callers. We are opening up the phone lines at 1, just like we do every single Monday, every single Friday. Here's the question for you. I'll remind you, and then I'll give you the number later. But the question is, what's the Seahawks' biggest problem? Seems easy, right? But there's a lot of different answers here. What is the Seahawks' biggest problem? Think of your answer to that. We're not going to stick on Seahawks, though, here coming up next because we have a very exciting guest. Mariners pitcher
yes,
Logan
do.
Gilbert going to join us on Jake and Stacey. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Guys, single game tickets for the Mariners go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. at mariners.com/tickets. Scheduled highlights include Ichiro Mariners Hall of Fame weekend. That's August 26th to 28th. 7 post-game fireworks nights presented by T-Mobile. And opening night, of course, which will be Thursday, March 31st against the Detroit Tigers. And you know who we're really excited to see this year is Logan Gilbert. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Logan, what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. We're really, really excited to talk to you. Speaking of, how excited are you just to get this upcoming season underway, given how you guys finished last year?
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, especially with how we ended. We had a great season, and it was such a long season and finally came to an end, but I felt like a lot of us are already ready to get back out there and start the next one.
You know, Logan, one of the things that just was so fascinating to me watching you through the season was the fact that it wasn't just you getting that experience. It was also the fact that you were tweaking some things and trying to get better and trying to work on the shape of your pitches and trying to make your delivery the same. How challenging was that, trying to do all of that crunched into one, and how excited are you to, you know, really build off of that this offseason?
Right. Yeah. Like you said, it was difficult and challenging. And I think just a major league season by itself is going to be challenging enough, and trying to adjust on the fly and all those things in the first year that you don't really know what to expect going into it, and try to just figure it out along the way. And now that I have a little downtime and a chance to take a breath, I'll try to continue to work on those things here in the off season and get it as refined as possible. And hopefully next year, I'll have a little better idea of what to expect and just take it all into next year and go from there.
What else are you working on in the off season? I mean, there's one thing, you know, you talked about kind of mentality and kind of how to approach the game. Anything with the pitch arsenal? I mean, anything you're working on in particular?
Nothing crazy right now. I think just the consistency of everything, especially the off-speed pitches. Not trying to do anything too crazy, really, except just making all my pitches work together and blend together, trying to make it harder for the hitters to tell what pitch is coming if everything comes out like a fastball. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Well, Logan, you have already gotten off to a pretty serious offseason here with some big moves being made, one being that you proposed.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yeah. Walk us through that. I mean, that's a big moment, man.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're so excited about it. My fiance Avely was working in Michigan, and I went up there to visit her. And, you know, I really wasn't too nervous leading up to it the whole day. I thought, you know, now that I pitched in front of big stadiums, big crowds, all that stuff, I kind of got it down. And then I actually pulled out the ring, and this thing was happening, and then everything hit me all at once and got nervous and all that. So I was trying to remember what I planned to say as best as I could. I don't even remember, honestly, but thankfully she said yes and everything worked out. So we're really excited about that.
Well, congratulations to the two of you. I love the idea that, like, look, I can face the Yankees lineup, no problem, but man, getting on one knee, I was sweating.
Yeah,
heart was beating.
Yeah. I didn't know what to expect. I thought it'd be easier, but turns out I was still nervous. But like I said, she said yes, so that's all that matters.
Jake, I imagine you were also pretty nervous. That's got to be a nerve-wracking moment.
Yes. Well, for me, I don't know about you, Logan, but like when you get to that point, it was just like kind of shaking as you're getting down on the knee, and then, you know,
don't drop the ring.
Yeah, trying to fumble through the words. But Logan, as you went through that, did you set it up with, hey, is this like sentimental to, you know, our story and us? Or was it just, you know, hey, I'm going to take her to a great place, a great location? You know, what was kind of the thought process behind the proposal there?
Yeah, so she grew up going to this island she was working on. So it was really special to her, that location. And I wanted to go up there and see her and propose before she came back to Florida. So her parents also got engaged very close to where I proposed. Aww. On that island. So there's a lot of sentimental value to not only her, but her entire family. So I think it was the right spot to do it.
Nice. Well done. Well done. I applaud that. That's awesome, man. We're super excited for you. Congratulations to you both. So now as you head into this next, you know, aspect of the season here, Logan, what is everybody's mindset that you can feel from? You know, have you talked to a lot of the guys, you know, so far this off season?
I haven't heard much, honestly. I keep up with Jared a little bit, especially being roommates there like we were last season. And, you know, everybody's just so excited, honestly. I think we saw a glimpse of it last year, especially with where we finished and how we ended the season. And, you know, people are starting to notice that I think we have what it takes, and we're right on the edge of the playoffs, and I think it's only going to get better in the years to come, especially with some more of the big guys coming up from the minors. So I'm really excited about the future and think we have a really good shot to do this thing.
What do you think of I'm assuming either you read Mitch Haniger's article in the Players Tribune or you've just heard him as a leader in that clubhouse talk about it, but what do you make of a leader on your team kind of having that kind of a message, basically saying, hey, watch out, MLB, like we're hungry and we're ready to make a run?
Yeah, I did. I got a chance to read it, and that's just who Mitch is and who he's been as long as I've been around him, from what I can tell. He's just a leader. That's who he is. He's the kind of guy you want on your team and you want to follow, honestly. So I think he hit the nail on the head. It was perfect, everything he said, and I think that's the attitude that a lot of us have in the locker room. So it's going to be exciting to go into next season and really fight for this thing and make a run.
You know, you kind of took the words out of my mouth. I was going to ask if you share that same mentality of like what your mentality is as far as looking around the rest of MLB and kind of thinking, you know, we're ready to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, just a little different because I didn't know a lot of what it's like in the MLB. So I had to experience it this first season to see. And of course, there's so many good teams out there and so many good players. But now that I have a little bit of experience, I can kind of look around and then look at our clubhouse and say, you know, exactly what Mitch said is right. We do have the pieces. We do have the team that it seems like it takes to get to the playoffs and win a lot of games in the playoffs. So I'm right there with him. I agree with everything he said.
So now, I mean, Logan, as you guys, you mentioned some of the younger guys that have the opportunity to come up. You know, is there any teammates that you have had, you know, down in the minor leagues that you're just like, I cannot wait to be teammates with this guy again at the big league level?
Yeah, absolutely. The first guy is Julio. That's the first guy that comes to mind when you say that. He's just an awesome guy. I mean, exactly what you guys see and hear in interviews and all that kind of stuff. That's who he is as a person. He gets everybody excited around him, the kind of guy you want to play with, and he hypes you up, and you can tell that he believes in you, all that kind of stuff. So he's obviously amazing as a baseball player, but I'd say an even better teammate. So really excited for him to join the team this year.
I was going to say, is there any warning, right? Like, Logan, you got to help us out here. Is there anyone that's going to be really sarcastic, give us a hard time, where you're like, that guy's hilarious, he will not make it easy on you?
I don't know. Everybody's pretty good when it comes to that. So I don't think there's too many characters or anything like that. I was roommates with Emerson in spring training, and once he opens up, he's pretty funny. He's got a little attitude in a good way, like a funny way.
I think
Emerson's got a little personality.
We'll be on the lookout there.
Yeah.
Well, Logan, thanks so much, man. I mean, you know, this has been really fun, and we are so excited to see you back on the mound again. You know, it has been really fun to watch you know, grow and develop over this year, and really excited to see what you can do here in year two, you know, putting everything together. I mean, you know, Logan, one of the things that I was curious about is that as you went on, what was the feeling like for you going from, you know, hey, maybe your first couple starts to what you felt like by the end of the season?
This season was kind of crazy. You know, a lot of ups and downs. And once I got past the first few starts, I felt like I started to settle in a little bit and see myself have success. And then that leads to you just believing in yourself even more, believing in your pitches even more. And then had another rough stretch later in the year, but then kind of got past that and then finished pretty strong. So I think it's just seeing that, you know, I was confident, believing in my stuff, but when you start to see yourself have a little bit of success, then it starts to build on top of that. So I think it's nice just to have that experience, all the experience, the good and the bad, and kind of take that and build from it into next year.
All right, Logan. Well, best of luck to you guys this year, and we're excited to hopefully get another chance to talk to you a bit later this offseason. But until then, again, congratulations on your engagement. That's awesome news, man.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's great talking to you guys.
You too. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Logan.
All right. That was Logan Gilbert. Nice guy. He's so nice. I also like, I'm just imagining that moment of how nervous you'd be of trying to propose. This is just, I can't. All right. Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show. If you miss it, subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. We're opening up phone lines. Here's your question. What is the Seahawks' biggest problem? A lot of possible answers here. That number.
I want to hear from the people. We need.
You've been sounding
off. We need our go-tos. Come on. We need our go-tos.
That number, 206-421-3776. Again, that number is 206-421-3776. You can also reach us at 866-979-3776. What's the Seahawks' biggest problem? Your answers next.